Good morning. So last time we talked about implementing our instructions that dealt with stored data, and well, we had registers, so dealing with like a stored program counter, and we could have used more of those registers to implement the rest of our storage. So for example, we have RIX, RBX, and so on. And we could have implemented that in terms of the registers we had learned earlier, but instead we have some functionality that's built for us in HTLRS called a register file, which follows the design of the textbook, where this is already done for us. So the way that works is we have some inputs to this register file where we supply the register indices to read and write, and like our instruction memory, as we supply the correct index to read, it outputs the value out of that the register with that index. The indexes are the same ones that we have in our instruction encoding. And we have writes that work the same way as registers, in that we set up the write, but this time instead of just supplying a value to write, you also need to supply where that value is being written, so we have an input to supply that, and at the rising edge of the clock, that register is modified. And, well, one thing we were missing here with that sort of basic setup was that, well, often we don't want to write any registers. We need some way of doing that, and the mechanism our textbook authors chose for this is that register number 15, which in HTLRS we can write as reg_none, means don't write anything. So that was our register file. So we had our special, our inputs to choose what registers to read, give us corresponding values that were read, inputs to choose what registers to write and what to write again, and the writes happen at the next rising edge of the clock that we set it up probably a lot earlier. We also had a data memory. So we were thinking about implementing an instruction like memory to register move. Might have looked like we already had all the things we needed. That, well, we have a way of reading from memory, so we can just use that to read from memory already. And that was our instruction memory, as we called it. But nothing stops us from passing an address that's not an instruction there. But the problem was that to do that, we need to read the instruction, the mRemoveQ instruction, and the value that we want to read into register in separate cycles. Why would we need to do this? Because otherwise, we'd have this sort of loop where the instruction memory's output is used to compute the address we want to read, which is then used again to access the instruction memory. And we learned that that sort of loop would be unstable. That if we thought, remember our counter circuit idea, that as we were computing the address, that value would be changing, and it would be changing with the instruction memory outputs, which would change the address we're computing, and this would not result in a stable value. And we rely on having like registers to make sure that when we're computing things, that the input to the thing, to the computation, stays stable for long enough that we can compute a single value that isn't going to be changing all the time. So we could deal with that by having our memory to register move instruction take two cycles. And that wouldn't be an unreasonable solution. That's not the one we're choosing in our design. In our design, we want all the instructions to take one cycle. So to do that and access memory twice, we need some way of accessing memory other than the instruction memory. And the solution our textbook proposed is that we'll have a separate data memory. We learned that data memory actually accesses the same data the instruction memory accesses, but it's separate, so it has its own address input and its own output. So we don't have to worry about creating one of those cycles that won't work. It also supports writing. And the way writing works is very similar to what we saw with our registers in our register file, that we set up the write before the rising edge of the clock by supplying a place we want to write and the value to put there. And at that rising edge of the clock, that's when the actual write is going to happen. Now, unlike our register file, textbook authors chose a different way of controlling when our data memory did reads and writes, and they had these read and write enable signals that will control to do that, rather than like having a special address to indicate don't read or don't write anything. let me start talking about processor stages. So our textbook talks a lot about stages. They divide the work of the processor into fetch, decode, execute memory, write back, and PC update. And right now, this is a conceptual division of how the processor works. Why do I say conceptual? Because, well, the actual time things happen is based on how the components work. Generally, if we have something like a circuit that adds, well, it's going to add values as their input. It's not going to wait till later. It's going to, once the inputs become the values, it's going to start adding it. If we think about writing things, the write's going to happen when the clock signal says, and it has that rising edge. And that's where we left off last time. So questions about things we covered last time? Or we do a bit more of a dive, more systematically, into what happens in each of these stages. Okay, so we're going to just walk through each of these stages and look at sort of more systematically what happens. I mentioned the reason we might like the textbook's idea of stages is we can look at each stage individually and say, how should it work, rather than taking a complicated instruction like, say, pop, and needing to think about the whole processor all at once and what pop does. We can just say, what should pop do in fetch? What should it do in decode? And those should be easier questions to answer. So I'm going to start with our fetch stage and show sort of how our textbook presents it with the names they use. So in the fetch stage, as defined by our textbook, is where we read the instruction. If it makes sense, fetching the instruction. We split it up into its components. And I'm showing our textbook's name. So our textbook calls the main opcode iCode and the secondary opcode iFun. We have our register numbers, and we have the constant from the instruction, which our textbook calls valc. So I'm going to show the names our textbook uses, so you can look at our textbook and not be confused. But maybe our textbook's variable names aren't so great, like valc doesn't. Seems like maybe we could come up with a better name, constant, or immediate. There might have been some better name they could have chosen for this value than valc. There's a convention in our textbook that they like naming things val and a letter for various 64-bit values in the processor. But maybe they should have thought, this isn't the clearest thing if you're reading things. And when you're writing your HTLRS code, you certainly don't need to use the textbook names. So you split it up into these separate wires. Not all these wires will be meaningful for all instructions. A note on valc, if you look at our instruction encoding, this is slightly different parts of an instruction for a call versus a move. And this is where we take that into account. But then based on that, you also do one other piece of work, which is we compute the next instruction address. And by this I mean the address of the instruction that follows in machine code. So this is not like if we have a jump where we're jumping to, this is just the address of the following instruction. Our textbook calls this valp. This is just PC plus the current instruction's length. And you might say, is that really part of fetch? Well, our textbook authors chose to do it with fetch. We'll see a reason why they group this in the fetch stage when we talk about pipelining our topic next week. So if I draw this out on the diagram, this is what we have so far with our fetch stage. That we send our program counter value to the instruction memory. We split out the instruction into valc, RA, and RB. And also we take the opcode and use that to compute where the next instruction in the machine code would start. Some questions on what I've drawn for fetch. Okay, so our next stage is called decode. And maybe this is not a great name. Textbook isn't the only one to use this name. But in this case, this decode stage isn't actually doing much interpretation of the instruction, which is what you would normally expect a decode stage to do. Because most of that work has already been done in the fetch stage. Instead, this is where we're reading registers. Maybe a better name for this stage would be register read. And so if we think of that, well, we're going to compute two values, which are register values. Our textbook calls them val A and val B, being the A and B outputs of the register file. And maybe the most straightforward way of setting this up is that, oh, we have our A and our B. We're going to read two registers, so we're going to send our A and our B to our register file source inputs. So out of the corresponding output inputs here and here, we're going to get val A and val B, our two register values. Now, I've drawn just the common case here. So a question is, this probably isn't always the right thing. So what instructions have I done something where we have a problem? Yes, of course, I haven't drawn the whole circuit yet. I haven't done anything with the memory yet. But there's some instructions where, given what I've drawn, there's something I need to do to change what I've already drawn in order to implement that instruction. But no matter what else I add, it's not going to fix it. I have this list here, so. Start taking a look at that. Check with your neighbor, see if you agree and where we would or would not have problems. So let's start with not. So who thinks we'd have a problem for not? That I've done something which is going to make it hard to implement not already. Thinks we'd have no problem for not. People who has no clue. Few people. So what we're worried about here is that I have made this fixed choice that I am definitely reading from RA and RB. And if we think about NOP, well, NOP doesn't want to read from any registers. And you might also say, well, NOP doesn't have an RA and RB. Well, in its encoding, it doesn't. But if we think of our NOP instruction, so that's going to be encoded as 1-0. And when we're extracting RA and RB, we're going to be looking where they would usually be, which will be if we have, say, a NOP followed by a halt, would be whatever in the following byte, which would be, in the case of a not followed by halt, the halt instruction, which would have two zeros, and we'd interpret those two fields as RA and RB. So for this hypothetical not followed by a halt, we'd be reading from register 0 both times. And register 0 is RAX, if we look up in our table for instruction encoding. So this NOP instruction will be reading from REX twice. You might say, that's a problem. NOP's not supposed to read from anything. And That's not unreasonable, but it's not actually harmful to read from registers as long as we don't end up doing anything with these values here. So I think map is okay. You know, but could be better. It would be better if we had a way of explicitly not reading from any register, which we could add by using that register none value, but right now we're just choosing some junk register number, which is whatever happens to follow the NOP and does that, but maybe it would be better if we had an option to read from register none, which is OXF, which we could add. Some questions about my logic for like NOP. It will work. Maybe it would be cleaner not to, but we don't really need to as long as we don't use the values we read. So who thinks that this would have a problem for add? Thinks it would be fine for add? Okay, so we have pretty good consensus on that. I would agree, so this would be okay for add. Who thinks this would have a problem for mRemoveQ? Thinks this would be fine for mRemoveQ? Okay, so we have a split here. So for mRemoveQ, we want to do, it's MR move Q of DRB into RA. So what do we need to read register-wise? We need to read from RB. We have a way of doing that, so that seems fine. We don't actually need to write to read from RA, but if we do it, it's not going to be a problem as long as we don't use the value we read. So it's fine with or without the addition of this choosing register none option here. And that's all we need to read from. You might say, wait a moment, but we need to do stuff with the displacement. Well, it's right here. We can use it later, right? We still have to draw some part of the circuit over here, and we can connect that to the components we need. It's not going to be a problem. We can, when we're drawing that rest of the circuit, we can deal with the fact that we don't actually want the value we read from register A. So I think there shouldn't be a problem with MR move Q. And also we can deal with writing because we haven't even connected done anything with the writing inputs yet. So we can still connect them up correctly for writing to the right registers. So I think MR move Q is also okay. Some questions on how I figure that out? Yes.
So even though we are not specifying the designation at this point, yeah, it's not going to be a problem at all as long as we do later.
Question, even though we're not specifying the destination register,
so
it's not going to be a problem?
Right.
Yes, it's not going to be a problem because we can do that later when we connect these two signals, which I haven't done yet, but I still have the opportunity to do that. I haven't like blocked myself. But on the other hand, like if I wanted to read from register none for instead of reading from RA, I would have blocked myself occasionally. Okay, so who thinks we'd have a problem with R move Q? Thinks we have no problem with R move Q? Okay, so we have pretty good consensus there, and I would agree. Who thinks we'd have a problem with jump? Thinks we have no problem with jump? Okay, so we have a split there, and I think jump is the same case as not. That logically, jump doesn't do anything with registers, but if we're reading from some random register numbers, which would just be like parts of the address we're interpreting as register numbers, it's not going to be a problem. It's not going to break anything as long as we aren't doing anything with these values that we read out. So I think this is an okay, but could be better. Better issue. Who thinks we'd have a problem with push? Thinks we wouldn't have a problem with push? No clue. Okay, so let's talk about what push does. So come and tell me what push does. I'll give you a more specific example even to make it clear. So push RAX. What does that instruction do? Someone, yeah. So, okay, so it pushes, so RAX goes to the stack, okay? And how do we know where the stack is? RSP, someone said, oh, that was a big follow-up, but, okay, so, which is going to be based on, which just means memory at, so how does this relate to RSP, something about RSP? What? Sorry, the...
If RSP is the
we're going to initialize... Okay, so you're saying we're to write to memory at RSP? Okay. So this is where we need to be careful about how the stack works. But we have sort of the right start here. So I guess we have what we need here. We're going to think about this. This is not something with RSP, but remember it pushes something new onto the stack. So it's going to be a little more than that. But something we can immediately say is it's something with RSP, and we aren't reading the stack pointer right now. So that's going to be a problem. So this is going to be no. We need to read the stack pointer. As far as what it does, when we push onto the stack, we have our stack pointer points to the current top of the stack. And RAX should end up in the sort of new top of the stack. So it's going to actually write RAX to the current RSP minus 8, which is also what the stack pointer is going to be set to. But, you know, regardless of the details, we definitely need the stack pointer to do this operation. Yes? So the question is the problem that we have RA and RB specifically here, so we can't choose whatever registry we want to read from? Yes, and in fact, it's specifically in the case of this push RAX, RA is going to be RAX, because that's how the encoding works. And if we look at the machine code for push, RB is going to be, in the instruction, is going to be OXF, just because that part of the instruction for push is an F. And that's neither of those are the stack pointer, but we have to supply the index for the stack pointer to the register file, or else we'll never get the stack pointer's value. Does that answer your question? Other questions, follow-ups? Yeah.
So why do we always have to have two sources of
register? Question, why do we have to have two sources of register? So our register file supports up to two sources, which some instructions definitely need. And if we think of how this works physically there are wires for these sources, and they have to have something on them. Now, we could have had like an enable-disable signal to say to ignore those wires sometimes, perhaps. That would have been a possible design. But either way, we're still going to have the inputs have something on them, just we might may or may not use it. Does that answer your question? Yes. How would we connect RSP to there, to the RA or RB? You would use a mux. Like so. So we would end up with, we could have choose between RB and RSP as what goes to the source B. Why would I use RB for this? Because for push, and also it turns out the other instructions that use the stack, we don't, RB is not in use, or at least doesn't have to be in use. And push is not the only instruction which needs the stack pointer, also pop, call, and return all need it. So we're going to compute that. And a way we might figure this out is that I just go through all the instructions and say, what do I want my two registers I'm reading for them to be? So I'm going to say, oh, halt, not, conditional jump, IRM review, we don't want to read from anything. Conditional move and register move, I want to read from RA. And we could just go through all the instructions like this and figure out what to read and write and translate that into muxes. And we find out that we're going to have a mux for source B, that second register index input. That's either RB for MR move Q, R move Q, and op Q, or is RSP for call, return, push, and pop. And if we are doing the thing where we explicitly supply no register, it's going to be none for a bunch of instructions. We could also just say that we're not going to supply that input and we're just going to supply one of RB or RSP in that case and say, well, I'm not using the result anyways, it doesn't matter. But this is sort of what we'll end up with. So questions? I came up with this idea of just going through all the instructions and figure out what do we want source A and source B to be. Just thinking, or what we're thinking is, what registers did this instruction need? Let's make sure I read both of them, or all of them, if there's two, or one, or them, if there's one. Okay, so that's our instruction. Yes?
So, just wondering, with that register file, can you make like a really robust one that can handle any kind of register input, like regardless of like instruction, I guess?
Could I make a register file that can handle any kind of register input? What are the kinds of register input we're concerned about?
Well, like, the thing is, like, the reason, like, pop or push didn't work earlier was because, like, our register file was not configured to handle RSP.
So question, the reason why push didn't work right earlier is because our register file wasn't configured to handle it? No, I would say it's because the circuit that inputted to the register file, because our fix, we didn't modify the register file at all.
Okay.
Right, so the register file's fine. I'm just modifying the stuff outside the register file. But we're not changing anything about how the register file works to fix this problem.
So that fix that handles any sort of register input at that point, right? Not the register file, but the wires.
Yeah, so the question is, could we like extend this fix to handle any sort of registers we want to read? Yeah, so if we had new instructions that read registers in different ways, as long as we're reading only two of them, we can add muxes to make it work. If we want to read more than two, then we have to think about other solutions that probably involve either modifying the register file or abandoning the idea that we finish every instruction in one cycle. Other questions? Okay, so that's our instruction to code, which really means register read stage. Then we have execute. So execute is where you perform an ALU operation. And in our textbooks design, the ALU can do add, subtract, x, or, and AND. Why did they choose those? Well, those are the opq instructions. And they call the ALU output vali again. Maybe we could think of a better name than vali for this, but that's the name they used for the ALU output. There's another thing which goes on the execute stage in our textbook's design, and this is handling condition codes. So why would you do this here? Well, one reason is that, remember, condition codes are set by arithmetic operations. And this is where we're doing the arithmetic operation. So this is the most convenient place to write condition codes. And our textbook authors chose that, oh, we're also going to deal with reading the condition codes here. We'll see that this is a good idea when we're talking about our pipeline design that we'll talk about next week, where we have the stages actually happen in the exact sequence. And it's really convenient for the reading of the condition codes to happen here. And by reading condition codes, I mean this is where we say we have a jump less than or a C move less than, where we figure out whether the less than condition is true or not based on SF and ZF. So this is where that's gonna happen. But obviously, if we think of jump or conditional move. We're not going to apply the result of that here because we're not writing about registers in this stage and we're not changing the PC in this stage. So if, when we read the condition codes and process them, the actual result of that is going to be used later. Yes? Question, what is IFUN? IFUN is the second part of the opcode, which tells us for like a conditional jump or conditional move, whether it's less than, greater than, and so on. Does that answer your question? Other questions? Okay, so we're gonna have some logic which processes that IFUN value, that condition code information, so this is whether it's less than, greater than, and so on. And a way we might do that is we could have a mux where we choose between, oh, is it always, or for the less than or equal condition, we say, we just or SF and ZF together, so if SF is true or ZF is true, then we say the less than or equal condition is true, and we get sort of this signal our textbook calls CND, which is, you know, is the current condition met? Current condition met. So like if we have a jump less than, is it less than? If we have a jump C move greater than, is it greater than? Is that condition true? And then this is used in some, this is all, it would be, you know, a later stages use of this value. Not actually part of the execute. In this example, this is C move, so this is part of the read back. Yes? Question is the thing taking the condition codes, is this a multiplexer? Yes. So this shape here, this trapezoid type shape, is a multiplexer. Does that answer your question? Question, you thought a multiplexer output of the select input? Yes, so we have, for this multiplexer here, we have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 inputs and one output, which goes here.
But the output is a Boolean value.
But the output is a Boolean value because, yeah, yes, because the inputs are Boolean values. Does that answer your question? Other questions? And I guess I should say that this multiplexer is one way of building it, maybe not the only solution. Right. Could write this in a different way, too. Yes?
Because some
How do you check multiple condition codes? How do we check multiple condition codes? What do we mean by checking multiple condition codes?
I think in lecture we talked about how checking if something is greater than zero, I think we need to check the sign bit.
Okay, so the question is, how are we doing with checking the sign bit and the zero flag? In this design, the inputs to some of these options for the mux use both SF and ZF. And sometimes they don't, which is probably what is causing your confusion. Like for less than, we only need to check SF, so I didn't do anything with ZF, but that's just because that's how less than works, not because I'm generally only using one of them. Does that answer your question? Okay, other questions? Yeah.
So these inputs are essentially logical combinations of the flags.
Question, these inputs are just combinations of the flags? Yes. Which just a combination of the flag that corresponds to one of the possible conditions for a jump or conditional move. Okay, so we have our execute stage, and the most straightforward thing that would happen as far as the ALU operation is that we take our two register values, like the two things we're adding, put them together, and we also have this input to the ALU to say which operation to select, and we choose that appropriately. And again, this is a case where what I've done here, well, it's going to work for some instructions, but I might not have thought of all my instructions, so for which instructions would there be a problem? Where would I, with this, these two wires I added, where would I have want to change something about them? Okay, who'd like some more time? Okay, so let's start with who thinks we have a problem for now. Thinks not would be fine. Okay, so I would agree. Yes, we are adding two things together or doing something, but we can't make the ALU do nothing, so and as long as we don't use the result, it's not going to cause a problem. Who thinks we have a problem for add? Add would be fine. Three, so add, we went to add the two registers we just read. It looks like exactly what we're set up to do. How about mRemove Q? Who thinks we have a problem for mRemove Q? Thinks mRemove Q is fine. Okay, so mRemove Q. Say, oh, doesn't compute any, doesn't like do arithmetic, but it does. So mRemove Q, let's remember the instruction. mRemove Q D of RB into RA. So this is going to compute D plus RB. And a question we should ask is, where is that going to be done? And one option we'd have is we could have a separate circuit that does an add somewhere. But in that case, we'd be kind of wasting our ALU. We'd have two things that do adds, one of which would not be in use. That's not a very efficient use of our sort of processor resources. So we're going to really want to use the ALU here to do that addition of D plus RB, rather than making a second adder, you know, when we already have one right here, and we really don't want to have like multiple adders, only one of which is ever in use. So we want to use this adder, but right now we have to add RA plus RB, but we want to add D. Where is D here? Well, D is the constant from the instruction, which is what is vel C. So we have D, but we want to get it to our ALU to add it to RB. So we'd like to have a connection there. We're going to add a mux to implement that. But that is something we definitely actually need for this instruction, assuming we don't want to add a second adder but only use one at a time, which is, would be very, very wasteful. So here we need a problem, so we need D needs to go to the ALU. So questions on sort of my logic there that we have a problem because we want to get D into the ALU. Okay. Let's go on to the next one. So who thinks we'd have a problem with pop? Thinks we wouldn't have a problem with pop? Who has no clue? People, most people have opinions, but the opinions are split. So let's think about what pop does. So pop RAX is going to take the stack value and send it into RAX. So that all seems fine. We can get the stack pointer from RB and send it to the data memory and get all that done. Like, we have room to do that. But there's another thing it does, is that it doesn't just peek at the stack, it removes from the stack, which means it has to modify the stack pointer. So it's going to set the stack pointer to RSP plus 8. So it does these two operations. And the second one, we need to compute the stack pointer plus 8. And again, we could have a separate adder for this, but then we're not using our ALU for anything, and that seems wasteful to have two adders, but we don't really need that. But there's no way to make this ALU do the plus 8 operation. So I also need some way of doing that. And probably the easiest way is to have a way of inputting 8 into the ALU. Then we can just have it do its add as usual. It already knows how to do an add. And it turns out that in the case of pop, this would be RSP as the second input because that's where we're reading it from. So there's no problem there. Gives you our 8 plus RSP. Some questions? Logic for pop So for pop, we want to do the RSP plus 8 computation. And we really want to use this ALU rather than making a new adder for it that we only use for plus 8. So that would seem wasteful given that we're not using the other one. So I add an input in. Okay, so then let's talk about call. So who thinks we would have a problem for call? Thinks we would not. Okay, so most people think we would have a problem for call. So for call, it's the same situation as in pop, except we're pushing onto the stack, which means that we're going to need to do RSP minus 8 to adjust the stack pointer. You might think, oh, wait a moment, don't we need to compute the address of the next instruction for a call? What, don't we do that? Well, no, we do, but that's done here. We already have it. So we don't need to use the ALU for that computation because it's already done with this separate circuit. So we have the exceptions we mentioned. So MR move Q, R move Q, we need to get the displacement in there. For push, pop, call, return, we need to get 8 to decrement or increment the stack pointer. So I'm going to have this mux here where I compute my ALUA input depending on those instructions. Questions about sort of our overall solution for execute. Okay, so then we have the memory stage. So this is where we read or write the data memory, and there's a signal our textbook calls valm. Again, maybe you could think of a better name, which is just the value read from the memory, if we're reading. So if we think about how we access the memory, generally we're computing an address, usually by doing D plus RB. We get that from the ALU, and we're storing a register's value into it, which we usually get from output A of the register file. So here's my sort of common case version of the memory stage. I take my RA value as the data input. I take my address from the ALU. I have the write enable signal chosen based on the instruction, so I'm not gonna write this value for instructions that don't write to memory. My question is, which instructions would have a problem? This set. Check with your neighbors, see if you agree on what should be going on. Would like some more time? Okay, so who thinks we'd have a problem with NOP? Thinks NOP would be fine? Okay, so most of you think it would be fine. I think that's a reasonable answer. Probably, but we might want to re-enable signal here because maybe reading from memory locations that aren't valid is a bit more of a concern with the data memory than it is with the register file, because maybe some of the memory locations don't actually work. Probably, you know, maybe one reading. Signal. Depending on how the data memory works exactly, with what we've described so far, it's probably fine. But we know that like there are things like seg faults, so maybe we don't. Maybe we want to control that more carefully. How about arm of Q? Who thinks there would be a problem for arm of Q? Thinks arm of Q will work fine? Okay, I would agree. So arm of Q, we want to do D plus RB. We can absolutely compute that as the address. We want to store RA, we absolutely have that. That looks fine. How about M remove Q? Who thinks M remove Q would have a problem? Thinks M remove Q is fine? Okay, so we have a split there. So M remove Q, we have to look carefully at the instruction encoding. Yes, there's two possible issues. So M remove Q, one concern you might have is you might say, M remove Q, well, you know, we're computing a displacement plus the first register. Isn't the first register here? And if we look at the instruction encoding table, mRemoveQ is mRemoveQ D of RB, comma RA. So it turns out that the first register in the instruction is the one that comes out of RB because of where it is in the machine code. So we are in fact computing the right address where mRemoveQ wants to read from. Then your concern might be, wait, but we're reading, how are we going to get the register value there? And that's not a problem because, well, we can still connect it over here and set up register A to be set up later on. We haven't done that yet, but we'll do that in a later stage. So questions about why mRemoveQ is actually okay. I think the main thing that probably got people is just that the register order in assembly is different than the order in machine code. Questions, comments? We'll just highlight that. It's RB is first. So how about POPQ? Who thinks we have a problem for POP? Who thinks POP is fine? Okay, so let's talk about what POP does. And if we have our stack, and this is RSP points here, after POP, RSP, so this is the value to POP. And then the stack pointer will point 8 equals new RSP. This is where the stack pointer points after popping. If we think about what we said for the execute stage, we need to compute RSP plus 8, which is going to be the new stack pointer. So that means that RSP plus 8 here, that's going to be what's coming out of our ALU. But the place we went to read from is actually the old RSP. So you want to get the old RSP as the address to read from because that's the current top of the stack. But what the ALU is computing is the new top of the stack, which is not where we want to read. So this new RSP, this is what the ALU is computes. This is the old RSP. This is where to read memory. So we want to read memory from the old RSP, which is not the ALU's output, because the ALU is busy computing RSP equals 8. So in fact, does not work for pop. We want sort of here, we want old RSP, so it's not, there would be a problem. Some questions on that problem with pop? How about call? Who thinks we would have a problem with call? Who thinks we would not? Okay, so for call, you would say, well, let's look at the RSP issue. If we think about call, we have the old RSP, and we have the new RSP. And this is where the new RSP is where we write the return address. So as far as the old output of the ALU, that is actually fine. We want the new RSP value for call, so that's fine. But if we look at what we're writing there, we're writing register A. Can someone tell me what is call supposed to write to the stack? I said the return address. So where is the return address on this diagram? So if we do a call, try to write call foo, and in foo, I do a return, where does the return go to? Yeah. The instruction after call foo. So this return should head all the way over just to right after call foo. So that's the address we want to push onto the stack. That address is not in the register file, unless we've done something very special. So it must be somewhere else. And there's, in fact, a place where we're computing it. That address is this val p here from the call instruction. Because we're adding the length of the call instruction to the starting address, so that's going to be the address we compute. And that's what we want for the call instruction to be the input to the data memory for the value to write. But with the setup we have here, could it be? Because all we could write was a register value. So questions on the problem with call. So, you know, for call is we need the return address, which is val p. Questions? That. Okay, so we have our two special cases. So we have for the address, sometimes we're computing a new stack pointer value, but we want the old one. This is for pop and return. So you have a case for that where you need a box. And for the data, usually we're writing a register value to memory, but sometimes we're writing the return address, so we need to get that. So this gives me my new version where I've added a box to select the return address for call, PC plus 9, which is the same as val p call, and I've added a box to select sometimes that old stack pointer value instead of a new one we're computing. Questions about the choices I made here. Yes?
So, when exactly is the PC counter actually calculated?
The question is, when is the value of the new PC calculated?
Right.
So, there's a stage called PC update on the list of changes our textbook made, which is, we haven't gotten to yet. But at some point, we're going to have to, yes, add some stuff over here. That's going to calculate the new PC. Presumably, we're going to use this value here for that. Other questions? Okay, so the next stage in our textbook authors list is write back. This is where we modify registers. And sort of the most in sort of the most general case, is that we need to write a value that we computed, and we need to write a value from memory. And in our textbooks convention, we use E, the E register file input, for storing results from execute, that is ALU values that we computed, and the M for storing results from memory. This is what the textbook does. You don't have to do that, but I'm going to draw what the textbook did so you can refer to the textbook in my slides. And so in that design, we take the ALU output, we set it as the value for dest E, and dest E is typically, you know, it's going to be RB, and we take the value output of memory and feed it in as the dest M value, which is going to be typically RA, because if we know that pop and MR move Q write to RA. Okay, so this is our straightforward connection. So, same exercise as before. Which instructions doesn't this work for? Let's start with NOP. So, does this, who thinks that what I've done here, connecting RA to dest M, RB to dest E, and the ALU output to the next value for dest E, register dest E, and the memory output, the next value for dest M, who thinks this will work for NOP? Who thinks this will not work for NOP? Who has no idea? So who can tell me what NOP does with registers? What registers does NOP write to? What?
Reg9.
It doesn't write to any registers. What registers will you be writing to with this setup for NOP? How would we determine that? Yeah.
Wouldn't it be from
the next instruction? Yes. So let's say we have a NOP instruction, which was encoded as 10, and it's followed by a halt, which would be encoded as 00. Then we would interpret the beginning of the halt instruction as the RA and RB, because if this were an instruction with registers, that's where those register indices would be. So we'll get some random register indices from the next instruction, and most likely they aren't going to be OXM. Maybe they would be, that would be nice, but often they won't be. In which case, we will be writing something, in this example, into register 0, which is RAX. And that would be, we'd be writing something into RAX. Probably we don't want to do that. That's not something NOP is supposed to do. And if that something is different than the current value of RAX, which seems kind of likely, like is the data memory going to be outputting the same thing that's in RAX, or is the ALU? Probably not. That's going to be a problem. So we're going to have one first thing we're going to want to do, which is we're going to want to have a way of choosing reg9. I'll just write it as none, which we know is the register 15 value. So we'll have a way of choosing that for dest E and dest M. And that's going to be necessary for most instructions, because usually we're not writing two register values. Pop is the only instruction that does that. Okay. So questions about why I needed to be able to choose none, reg none for dest E and dest M? Yes.
And this bus is going to depend on the opcode.
Question is, this bus going to depend on the opcode? Yes. And possibly some other things, but mostly the opcode. I say possibly some other things because if we think of conditional move, for example. Okay. So after we've made this fix, let's think about IR move Q. So assuming we can select none, who thinks we have a problem with IR move Q? I'll give you a few seconds to think about that. Do we have a problem with IR move Q, or does this do what we want to do for IR move Q? And we're in the write back stage, so all we need to think about is what does IRMove queue register does IRMove queue want to write to, and where should the value it's writing come from. Who would like some more time? Okay, so who thinks IRMove queue is fine? We can do it. Who thinks we have a problem? Someone who thinks we have a problem want to describe what problem we think we have? Volunteers? What did you, yes? Okay, so your question is, well, I don't know how we're gonna get the constant as one of the register value inputs. Right, we want to get the constant, which is on this wire up here, you know, here. It needs to get to one of these two inputs, preferably the DESD one, because we want to write to RB if we look at the machine code coding for IRMove queue. Destination register is the RB field. And this constant, well, it goes to here, but then it goes through the ALU, and we might not end up with a constant when it's done. So probably the simplest fix would be that we could add a mux to choose between the two values, between the ALU output and that constant. It's not the only fix, but that's probably the simplest one. So questions, that, so the problem with it, IRMove queue, is the constant into the register file. We don't have a, we need a way to do that. Questions about that? Okay, how about, so, next we're moving on to MRMove queue. Anyone want more time to, So MRMove queue, who thinks we would have a problem? Thinks we would not have a problem? Who has no idea? Okay, a few people. So MRMove queue, what does it do? It's MRMove queue, the instruction is D of RB, memory at that, to RA. So we went to compute, get a value from memory that was hopefully done in the previous stage. So this should be our value from memory. This should be the DRB value, and it is in fact already set up to go to the register file as the next DESTM. So our question should be, can we write DESTM to register A? And absolutely we can set DESTM to register A, in which case we'll be writing the memory value there, and that should be fine. Assuming we fix the problem where, assuming we have the fix where DEST E can be set to none. So let's think about RMove queue. So who thinks we would have a problem for RMove queue? Thinks we would not have a problem for RMove queue? Who has no idea? Okay, can someone tell me what does RMove queue do about writing registers? So this is the write back stage. We care about writing registers. What does RMove queue do to write registers? Anyone? Back up? It doesn't. It writes memory. So what we want to do is we want to select the none signal here and the none signal here, and then we're done. We don't care what's coming into these inputs here because we've told it to the register file to not modify any registers. And so we're just going to select none twice and we're set. So that would implement our remove queue. So it's the same as for this stage, it's the same logic as not. So once we have the fix for NOP, our move queue is handled. Okay, how about add queue? Who thinks we would have a problem? Thinks we would not have a problem. Okay, so we have pretty good consensus that this is okay. Yeah, so once we have the ability to not specify guest M, we're great. We can specify RB for guest E. We're all set. Okay, then we have one more left, which is pop queue, which is definitely the most complicated instruction on this list. So pop queue, remember, is gonna read a value from the stack, which is memory, and write it to RA, and it's also gonna modify the stack pointer. Okay, so who thinks we would have a problem for pop? Who thinks we would not have a problem for pop? Who has no idea? Okay, so let's take a bit of time to think about that. So what does pop do? So pop RAX, what registers does it modify? Let's start with that. We have pop RAX, yes. So it modifies RAX. Read, so RAX is gonna get some value, okay? Anything else? Is that it? Anyone think that modifies any other registers? Yeah.
Just do RSP.
RSP. So why would it modify RSP?
It's
moving the stack pointer. Yes. So it's modifying RSP to RSP plus 8. Yep. And it's also setting RAX. So where does the value for RAX come from? For pop RAX. I should write this with percent. Anyone? Yeah.
Memory at RSP.
Memory at RSP. It comes from the stack. So it comes from memory. So we have memory output here, which we better have set correctly in the previous stage, because it's the only place we're going to get it. And that value is going into here. So if we're figuring out pop, I'm going to say, okay, so we're writing into whatever destem is the memory value. So I want destem for this instruction to be RAX. Can it be RAX? Well, RAX is RA. So that's going to work out fine. So destem looks great. Destem and next. And those two look great. Then we want to write RSP plus 8. Do we have that value? Well, we learned that we're computing it in the ALU. So RSP plus 8 is going to be coming out of the ALU here. So we have that value. And it's going into the register file as the next value for dest E. So as long as we set dest E to be the stack pointer, we're fine. Problem is, we have two options for dest E. We can set it to RB or none. RB, if we look at the instruction encoding for pop, is always going to be OXF, which is none. So our options are actually none or none, neither of which is the stack pointer. So that's a problem. So we need some way, so need to set destem to RSP. So we don't have a way of doing that, so there was a problem. We couldn't actually implement this instruction. So this is the sort of fix we got to. I have the ability to choose no register and RSP, and I have a bunch of possibilities for dest E, where I can get the constant from the instruction, or for register to register move, I can get a register value that doesn't go through the ALU. So I think this is the most straightforward way of implementing write back. This is not how our textbook does it. So our textbook says, gosh, this mux down here, that's that's a pretty complicated box. It has three inputs. You know what we can do instead? We can just add zero to values and pass them through the ALU. So rather than taking our constant and sending it over here, they just say, we're going to take our constant, put it through the ALU, and add zero to it. And we'll just add an option of zero to do that. And rather than taking our register value from here and sending it there, we're just going to take that value and add zero to it in the ALU. So that's what our textbook chooses to do. I don't care what you do, but just letting you know what the textbook does, just to say, make the boxes a little simpler. Okay, so finally, there's one more stage we need to talk about, which is the PC update. So this is where we choose the PC for the next cycle. So this is the PC input. We have three options. We have our most common case, which is where we're taking the instruction PC plus something, PC plus instruction length. We have our option for jumps, where we're taking a constant from the instruction, also the same thing for call. And we have the option for return, where we're reading a value from the stack, which comes from memory, and sending it all the way over as our next program counter line. Some questions so far? Okay, so that's set. I guess we may or may not do this exercise next time. But I did with the other section. And next week we'll do that and talk about making our stages a little more meaningful.